Territory podcast. For this episode, we invited Sean Carter as our guest to talk about developer experience, platform engineering, and the Spring platform. Hey, Sean, welcome to the show. Could you please introduce yourself and share some of the highlights of your career?
Wonderful. Yeah, thanks for having me. We've been working on this for a while, so I'm glad to finally be here. My name is Sean Carter. I am currently a Spring developer advocate at VMware Tanzu by Broadcom. I have been in the space since the 90s. When I was in college, university, I started my own company. It had various names, but today known by OpenJack, open source jack of all trades. And this was a way for me to learn about what I was learning in school, but like take it out into the real world. So it was a little bit of income while I was in university. But it really helped pave the path for me. In 1999, during the dot-com boom, I hit the big thing, the big time. I was in that dot-com boom, focused on e-commerce and in a web boutique to start. But my career spanned marketing, energy sector, agriculture, security space. I spent a lot of time at Garmin, consumer electronics, working on Garmin Connect. And also startups. So I've been kind of all over the place. But that company that I started when I was in college, I actually maintained that with the data center in my house for about 12 years. 2008, the crash happened and a lot of it went away. There's still a few customers there that are, again, OpenJack, open source jack of all trades. I was focused on, most of my customers were non-for-profit. So it was a way for me to learn and continue learning that was different from what I was doing during the day. And now today my kids are having fun carrying on that tradition, building websites and doing little things for nonprofit organizations.
Wow. Well, like before we started recording, we had a brief conversation about your passion for home labs as well. So if you look at the stuff that you hosted back in your basement, in your former company and look at how you are working in your home lab currently, what does that look like?
Right. There was some point along the way, I graduated from the colo computers and other people's data centers to, I'd heard about Google replacing these pizza box servers. It was too expensive to go in and figure it out. Just take the box out and put in a new one. So I kind of gone down this path of just having these pizza box servers. And I ended up having like 7 racks of servers in my basement. So fast forward from there, it was a great learning experience. And I had what I thought was a great approach to adding new customers and onboarding and rolling things out. But it came with all the maintenance and stuff that went along with that. But today I've replaced the pizza box servers, and later it was Dell R710s, like the larger data center type servers with Raspberry Pis. When I went and started working at Redis, that was a big concern of mine. It's like, hey, I had this equipment that was running 1.5 kilowatt hours in my basement, even when I was at idle, right? When I wasn't even doing anything. And to replace all of that with dozens of Raspberry Pis and see the difference in the power consumption, but also I now had kind of Kubernetes available. I had some other interesting things. I could still use Spring and take it to these Raspberry Pi devices to see the difference. And along that journey, I spent a lot of time with a handful of customers that were doing interesting things on the edge, out on oil tankers and out in fields and on farms that were hundreds of miles away from anybody that could actually maintain them. How do you deliver these workloads to these small consumer devices that may or may not have internet connectivity? This is where I find a lot of passion and have a lot of fun. So that's what my home lab looks like today. Instead of the massive enterprise grade servers. I have Raspberry Pis and other similar single board computers. There's a few Nooks in there, Intel Nooks, but delivering enterprise grade software to not enterprise grade infrastructure, spring on the edge. I have fun in that space.
Wow. And I think that's a great segue into probably the topic that most of our listeners might know you from. Like you mentioned in the introduction, you're a Spring advocate. You just briefly mentioned Kubernetes as well. The broader public probably knows you about, I would argue, the best hyped keynote session of VMware Explorer a couple of years ago. I have never experienced a keynote session that got so much energy. And you could feel it in the audience that there was energy there. What could you briefly explain about that?
Well, first of all, you gave me goosebumps. I might get a little teary-eyed because it was a big deal. I said before we started, I am passionate about what I do. I have scar tissue over the years. I've struggled, and I've seen that there's a better way. And a lot of times it's just people don't know about the better way. So at that VMware Explorer, it was important to me. It was great. I had this community that I knew was there, and we were doing something new at VMware Explorer, and I was happy to be there. And I believed in the products, and I believed in what we were doing in the Tanzu organization. So it was easy to get excited about. I'd had my hands on it. I'd seen it, and I knew from my history how much this was going to impact our community. So I was excited about it. I was jazzed to be there.
Oh, man. And for the listeners, obviously, you can't see it, but Deshaun has passion in his eyes when he talks about that moment in spring. So I couldn't be more excited about this episode. So let's dive directly into it. So one of the things you were, you were convincing the audience about is something you call developer experience. Now let's dive into developer experience first. What does that mean from a Tanzu by VMware Broadcom combination like perspective? What does that mean?
So I'm going to say I'm not sure what it means. You know, what's our company line? But for me, the developer experience is Git commit. I want to do a Git commit, and I want my software to land in production. If I can have that experience and have some visibility into what's running in production, I'm a happy developer. And that's at the bare minimum, at the base of everything. I want to do a Git commit, and wherever it lands, I think that most developers don't really care. Wherever it lands, I just want to have some visibility. Give me my metrics, my logs, my traces, my SBOM. Let me know that things are secure and that I haven't broken anything. Give me that visibility, but I really don't care where it runs. That's to me is the developer experience at large. There are some other things, and I look at this as a spring-centric piece. I want the things that I do the most to be the easiest. I want the right things to do to be the easiest. I want something preventing me from doing something wrong. I want to know what's on the menu, what's supported between my laptop and production. Show me those things and I will stay on those things. But if you give me carte blanche and you say, hey, well, it's up to me, but it's not supported in production, that makes my life more difficult. I want guardrails. I want to know what's my supported path to production. These are the things that I think of when I hear developer experience. And Spring and Spring Boot, they give me that. The things that I'm doing the most become the things that are the easiest and they're the simplest. And I have these conventions and that brings me joy. The problem solving part that I love to do as a developer is easy to get to. I can get through all of the easy stuff so I can get to the fun stuff. That's exciting.
Well, you mentioned Spring a couple of times, and I think Spring is part of the bigger picture, right? It's not just about Spring. It's I think, as a developer, you need to have all of the tools and all of the, you mentioned the guardrails. I think guardrails is good for every single person in their profession to get the most out of the things that that they're doing. Now, looking at the bigger picture, Spring is part of an entire portfolio. Well, it's not really part, but it kind of is part of a landscape. So if you look at the entire landscape of solutions that Broadcom offers for a developer, what can you tell about that, and where does Spring fit in?
Spring is the part that the developer is going to connect to the most. It's the part of a developer's day and life. It's the biggest part of a developer's day and life. A lot of the other things that are in this Tanzu umbrella that are developer-centric, developer-focused, are not touched as often. The experience of like a CF push, a Cloud Foundry CF push, this ease, like, hey, here's where things are. It goes beyond production, right? There's value in the CF push, you know, and how it gets deployed to production. But there's also kind of that value of CF push when I can do it on my laptop and know that that's the same thing that's happening in production, having that consistency, that parity between my environments. But also there's the Tanzu application platform, this idea that I can have these workloads and these software supply chains that are secured from front to back. It's more of a platform engineering focus, but it gives me an easy Git commit experience. And I love that as a developer. But they're kind of developer adjacent in my mind. Spring is the thing that the developers are interfacing with day in and day out. And Spring is a big part that has grown. It has changed a bunch over the last year and a half, especially. There was a rebase from Java 8 to Java 17 that came with Spring Framework 6 and Spring Boot 3 that happened in November of 2022. And yeah, the last year we've seen organizations kind of growing and moving and adopting these new things. Java comes out with a new version every 6 months. Spring Boot's coming out with a new version every 6 months. Spring Framework, a new version every year. The speed of business is changing. As a developer, I want to keep up. This is one of the things that I see a lot of. When I think of Tanzu and what it's doing for the community, and I think of Spring and what they're doing for the community, they're trying to make it easier to keep up. I quote one of our VPs, Purnima. She said, the speed of business is changing. The world is changing. We had OpenAI that went from 0 to 100 million users in 4 months. And we had one of the world's most popular banks go bankrupt in 2 days. That quote, when she said that, it stuck with me and it resonated. And that's the one I refer to. The things that we've done in the past aren't going to work going forward. We'll patch it every 6 months. That's not going to work going forward. We've learned our lessons. Business moves too fast. The bad actors are moving too fast. So these other things that as a developer, I don't really want to care about, Tanzu as a whole does. Tanzu as a whole has these, you know, commercial versions of things that are oftentimes built on top of open source alternatives are there as a way of, hey, we bet our business on this. We want to protect this investment. And Tanzu provides all of those things. Depending on how you're going to production, it provides, I won't say all, a lot of the pieces that you need to protect your investment, to maintain your investment. I'm confident that the future of software is how easy is it to maintain, and the Spring team has done a lot of work recently in order to make that easier to go forward. I'm talking about their adoption of Open Rewrite and the Spring Boot Migrator. They've got some tools that are going to help it, help you as a developer grow with your software. So what we take to production today, you know, in a future 6 months from now, when there's a new Java version and a new Spring Boot version, I have an easy path to be on the latest and greatest. As a developer, I get excited about being able to take advantage of all the new features and all the new performance and the language features. I love that. That's exciting. Nobody wants to work on stuff that's no longer supported. It, you know, it's a hard time to find a COBOL developer because there's not a whole lot of exciting new things going on in COBOL. But you ask, I tell developers, ask. If you're interviewing somewhere, ask them, what version of Java are they taking to production today? There's a big difference between a company that's taking Java 22 to production today and Java 8. There's a massive difference, and that's going to tell you a lot about that organization. But the same thing with Spring. What version of Spring Boot are you taking to production today? And I, you know, sometimes I'll raise up the question is, if your investors, if your stakeholders, your customers, if they knew what version of Spring Boot you were going to production with, would they be happy or would they be sad if they knew the difference between what you're going to production with and what's the latest and greatest? So yeah, there's so much to uncover here, but I get excited.
So you mentioned at the beginning that a lot has changed in the last, I think you mentioned 1.5 years, maybe 2 years.
I'm speaking specifically on the Spring Boot's rebase to Java 17. That was a big deal. Huge.
So if you look at innovation from that perspective, what are some of your favorite innovations that have been put into such a latest version of Spring?
So for me, I'm not deep on the language. I like going to production. I like solving problems and getting production. And I'm also a big fan of reducing the amount of infrastructure I need in order to deliver enterprise-grade solutions. So with Spring Boot 3 and Spring Framework 6, the Spring team did this rebase. You've got to use Java 17 at a minimum. They also introduced this ahead-of-time processing. They've been addressing some of the difficulty of taking Spring workloads, Spring Boot workloads, to more of these advanced deployment models. Right, the on the edge models, the Kubernetes scaling up and scaling down models, and the AOT processing along with the native image has been my favorite piece. This allows me to run a Spring Boot enterprise grade workload on a 512 megabyte, $15 single board computer. That's exciting. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal until you take it to the scale that a lot of our customers are using it. Right, when you've got a user service that gets deployed 100 times across 5 different regions, that today is taking 2 gigabytes of a reservation from your Kubernetes cluster. And if you could upgrade that to Java 22 and Spring Boot 3.2.4 and do a native image for that same thing, your image might only take 100 megs, which is an order of magnitude difference when you do that at scale. So these examples that I'm running on Raspberry Pis, when you take into consideration that these can be done at scale for the enterprise that you're working in, there are customers that have the ability to save millions of dollars, US or Canadian, millions of dollars every single month if they could just take advantage of the new releases. So the runtime changes with AOT processing, the native images, also Project Crack, so you can still use the JVM. And you can have that fast startup time, but still get all the benefits of the JVM. These are some of the things that they're monumental changes in the Spring ecosystem. And those are the ones that I'm the most passionate about, but there's so much more. That's just a few.
Well, and you mentioned the financial impact, positive impact for customers, but do you also see new use cases or new solutions arise because of those capabilities?
Absolutely. Consider those $15 single board computers. I am in this Spring on the Edge for a reason, because where I might have needed to deploy a Nook with 64 gigabytes of memory to run in, let's say, every store, that I'm operating, or every workshop that I'm operating, now I can deliver them on much smaller compute. I can deliver more compute in different places. I can put that compute closer to where it needs to be. And these are the use cases that I'm having visibility into with our ecosystem, because I'm raising my hand and saying, hey, that's cool to me. So I get to hear about some of the cool things that people are doing. And that's just one.
Awesome, man. Now, one thing you mentioned already a little bit is that Spring is obviously fully open source.
Yes.
Now, Tanzu is not. So how does the open source aspect of Spring contribute to Tanzu as kind of a closed source solution? And of course, some of the aspects of the Tanzu portfolio are open source, but mostly it's closed source. It's enterprise grade platform with support in the whole thing. But there's also another whole ecosystem of open source platform engineering solutions next to that. So
yeah.
First question, really, how does the open source aspect of Spring contribute to Tanzu as a platform? But also, follow-up question is, what if a customer still wants to use Spring, but chose the open source route when it comes to platform engineering.
Fantastic. Right. One of the jokes that I say often is, I don't have cloud money. I have Raspberry Pi money. I can deploy hundreds of workloads using Kubernetes across, you know, the hundreds of devices that I have running in my home lab. And for a long time, I was aware that there are open source alternatives. Cloud Foundry, Pivotal Cloud Foundry, Tanzu Application Service. These are all based on top of Cloud Foundry, which is an open source project. There is a Cloud Foundry Foundation that's supported by the Linux Foundation that is there that you can go and take to production. Over the years, I've seen that, hey, maybe the cost of running Tanzu Application Service has changed, or the situation has changed, or the workloads that are running on top of that platform have changed. And I've seen customers move to open source Cloud Foundry. I've also seen customers move from open source Cloud Foundry to the commercial version of Cloud Foundry, Tanzu Application Service. So I've seen this before. I was a Spring Developer Advocate, before I worked at Redis. I was a solution architect, a pivotal platform architect. But before that, I was a customer. I worked in a startup, and I was looking for all of the things, all the benefit. I wanted to get all the best value out of these open source Spring workloads that I was taking to production. I was all in on Spring Boot. I was all in on Spring Cloud, and I wanted a platform that would give me the best experience for those workloads. And I was aware of Cloud Foundry. I didn't have the VMware chops in order to use the open source version of Cloud Foundry at that time. And I'm speaking about 2015 to 2018 timeframe. But first product, I went and I was using Apache Mesos, which there was a DCOS was the platform. I think it had another name, Mesosphere. But it was almost Cloud Foundry, not quite. It was almost Kubernetes, not quite. It had some Kubernetes abilities, but it allowed me to use my data centers in a way that I could get some of these cloud native features out. I could deliver workloads in different regions of data center, but then we were making the shift. Like, we want some things running in the cloud, and there were some different vectors that we needed to consider: support, uptime, the SLAs that we could deliver to our customers. Now that we're running and we're doing good things for our customers, if my GitHub is down, if my Bitbucket can't have access, even though they're meeting their 99.9 SLA, that's not good enough for our customers. So how do we move forward? How do we address some of these things? Well, with the second product at my startup, before coming to Pivotal, we landed it on Pivotal Web Services. We landed on Cloud Foundry, and it was a night and day difference about the amount of time and effort that we were spending on our infrastructure. We were able to take that away and reinvest that into this second product that we're taking to market. And again, I could tell those stories for days, but it was value add. There was always an open source option, which was nice. I didn't feel like I was committed or trapped inside of a commercial only garden. If I needed to step back, I could, and that felt good. I was a VP of engineering. Every dollar counted. It mattered. And I had to have this these assurances as we were making these investments in the investments in our company. We were betting it on Spring. We were betting it on Cloud Foundry. And luckily it paid off. And I got to go do this with other customers as well. So I've kind of seen how that works. But other products in the Tanzu portfolio, Tanzu Application Platform, is built on top of these other open source thing. So on my laptop, I'm running Corifi, which is Cloud Foundry on Kubernetes. But I'm also running Knative, which is kind of the way that we scale to zero in Tanzu Application Platform. I have Kpact running. This is how we're building our software supply chains and building our containers that we take to production with build packs. I don't have to go in. I don't have the money to spend on all the Tanzu products. I don't need it. On my laptop, though, I can have this same production grade experience that our customers have. I can face and I can run and I can execute the same supply chains, the same path to reduction. I can bring in the same open source tooling that you do. And I can do it on my laptop, and I can have parity with what you're doing in production. So I understand your production concerns, and maybe I don't have the money. Maybe I'm only a 3-person startup. I've got a path today that goes from this is how much I can afford to I need the commercial support. I need 24/7 support. I'm not going to have 2 weeks to find the solution to the problem that I'm running into. I want to be able to, get access to the people that wrote it, that maintain it, that are taking care of it, not just for my platform, but also for the framework I'm taking to that platform. I want 24/7 access to the people that are writing Spring Boot, to Spencer Gibb that's created Spring Cloud Gateway. I want that as well. Once my business has hit that level, once my customers are demanding that kind of experience, that's what I want. So I have options.
Yeah. And options are great. It's also, I think that every single platform engineering team does it different. Every customer is different. And I think, yeah, you should definitely do what feels right. And that probably also contributes to developer experience as a whole, I guess.
This, that you bring up platform engineering, and every organization does it different. It's about the pressures and what are the important things to your org. How does your org compete against, you know, their competitors? What are they doing different? Where is their special sauce? But you also, in that same breath, brought up the developer experience. I am convinced that the platform teams that are doing the most for their developers, that they're giving their developers the best developer experience, they're bringing developers to their platform. Those platform teams are providing an easy onboarding process. They're providing a way that, hey, you're taking your code to production like this today. If you would like, here, you know, press this easy button. Your application can run on our platform and you can do a side-by-side comparison. And not only that, here's what's on the menu. These are the services that we support. We've got expertise in-house. We've got a channel to Oracle or to Neo4j. We have a supported set of things that are on the menu. We have Cloud Foundry, for example, or TAP, or whatever it is, OpenShift. We have these things that are on the menu, and this is what our platform looks like. There's value in that. Because I was a developer. And a lot of times I was doing things. I just need to get this feature out. And here's an easy path. Oh, I got it working. It might not be the most secure. It might not be the most performant, but it's in production. It's working. And I can close that ticket. The platform engineers are able to say, yes, you can run that same code. And maybe here's a better way. And let's run it side by side. And here's, worry about less things between you and production. Focus on the things that you need to focus on. Git commit. From the Git commit, here's what our path to production looks like. And I don't think you can stop the conversation between the developer experience and the platform engineers. Because I'll go back to what I said. It's, I want that Git commit. I want Git commit, like run it for me. I don't care how, right? I don't care where. Give me some visibility at the end. And it's real. There's a lot of teams that they call themselves a platform team, and they run the workloads for the developers, but they don't have a relationship with their developers. And that always rubs me the wrong way. If you don't know any of the teams or what any of the teams need, a lot of times it's the platform team says, yep, here's what they need. Here's what I'm putting out there, and go consume it. But, you know, there's one that comes to mind. Like if you do building and nobody comes, like even though you're on budget, on time, if nobody's using it after you've delivered it, was it a success? And I think the answer is no. You have to know what your consumers need. And business is moving fast. You have to be continuously iterating on that. The bar that you had 2 years ago is not the same as it is today. So platform teams, I'm talking to you. If you don't have a relationship with your developers, go get one. Ask them what they want. And I'll tell you, they want Git commit. They want a secure path of production that's supported. They want to know what's on the menu. That's how you start.
Most of our listeners probably fall in the bucket. Bucket is not probably the best word, but they fall in the category of either IT admin or IT practitioner, or maybe even a platform engineer. So you mentioned that a couple of times, and I find it interesting because it's one of the challenges we see at customers in general, is that IT is not talking that much with developers or with the business as a whole as well. IT quite often sits on an island and has an idea of what the business would like to do, but there's so much more. So, you know, if customers would like to, you know, need to focus on those conversations, on those relationships between the platform engineers and IT and the developers at the other side, you know, how would you approach such a challenge?
Yeah, the thing is that that what you're facing, this is true. It happens across the globe. I've seen it where, hey, we delivered this cool thing. We've got OpenShift up and running. We've got Tanzu Application Platform up and running, but nobody's going to production yet, right? Making that path easy to adopt, the easy button. This is a part of what it takes. You can't just deploy something and expect that people are going to consume it. So what I see, what I've witnessed from the best, the most mature, and I'm going to say bucket, right? I think every company has good, better, and best buckets of the different platforms. A lot of times there's more than one in the building. But what I see from that best bucket is that they have communication. They're doing marketing. They have internal advocates. They have something like an office hours, a regular cadence where they're getting feedback from their internal customers. They've got relationships with their partners. So they can bring in when the new version of Oracle drops, they have somebody from Oracle come and explain, here's all the things that are available, not doing a sales pitch, doing enablement and education. These are what the best platform teams do in that best bucket. So yeah, I've been lucky enough to witness how this works. And whatever you call it, right? The thing that I like to see is these channels of communication that go from the platform team. Typically, they're going to stop at the platform team. The platform team has a relationship with the vendors, the Red Hats and the VMwares and the Broadcoms and the Oracles. They have those relationships, and they will bring those relationships in as needed. But there are channels from that platform team to every single developer across the org, across the globe. This is what works. Whether you call it a guild or a mob or an office hours or whatever you call it, that you have to have these channels of communication between the developers and the people that are supporting the developers, the platform engineering team or whatever you call it. The names don't matter. Get the communication in place. That's the important part, right? Yeah. There are teams that can help. This is the other thing that I like to say is like, take advantage of your vendors, like use them. If you're paying for something and it's sitting on the table and you're not aware of how to get it, how to use it to its advantage, ask. You have relationships with vendors, or maybe you don't. Maybe you just have relationships with an open source community. Use them. Ask your questions. Don't spin your wheels. I was in that seat too, right? Again, I'm bringing up scar tissue. I was afraid to raise my question publicly in a GitHub request. I was afraid to admit that I don't know the answer to this, and I was afraid that there was an answer in the docs somewhere. So I was afraid to raise my hand. I'm a little bit older, a little bit wiser now. And you know how many times I've seen where people have asked questions and, oh yeah, hey, it was in the docs. Or the documentation was wrong. Hey, I read the documentation. I expected this, and this is what I got. And they raised that question. They opened up a GitHub issue. I know the Spring team would love a GitHub issue like that. This is what I expected. This is what I got. Like, that's huge. And there's an opportunity there. The next step is, hey, the documentation said this. I think that this would make it more clear. Those types of communication, I think if you ask the Spring team, I think most of the Spring team is a part of the Spring team because they were willing to raise their hand. They were willing to ask those questions in the community, and they were willing to put in a little bit of effort. Submit a PR for a doc, for a demo, for a sample or otherwise. I think if you ask, I think most of them will say that they are on the Spring team because of that. This is an important part of the open source ecosystem.
So like I mentioned, most of our listeners are in the field of platform engineering, IT admins, IT practitioners. So what value does Spring specifically bring to them as opposed to other solutions out there?
Yeah, I wore both hats, right? I came into this, I was a developer. That was my title for the first, whatever, 16 years of my career outside of university. But I had this open jack where I was doing the platform, taking care of things for customers. I had customers. So I was aware of what was on the other side of that wall. You know, it wasn't too long ago where you committed your code and you threw it over the wall and somebody else was taking it to production. And you had no idea what production looked like. It was a big black box. And, oh, hey, there's a problem with your config and they ship it back. And that loop could be 2 weeks or a month. And we realize now, again, things move too fast. That's not acceptable. So we have these containerized workloads and we can take things to production faster. We get better observability. It wasn't even a word 10 years ago, right? We have all of these things that have changed. Our ecosystem has changed. Our tool set has changed. What does Spring do for a platform engineer? It's enterprise grade. It's production ready. The thing that changed my life, again, as a developer, but also wearing that platform engineer hat. I have these actuator endpoints. I had endpoints that I could expose on an internal only port or firewall that I could see what is happening in my application right now. I could connect to those actuator endpoints and I could get a visualization of what my entire workload, everything that's in production, I could see, is it healthy or not? Am I running out of room? Where's my hotspots for me? The actuator that was included with Spring Boot, it was a game changer. This is what made me fall in love with Spring Boot. And I was doing the analysis. I was trying to figure out how we could take things to production in a better way. I wanted that observability. This is a massive global software that we were dealing with millions of users. I needed better observability into my workloads. I needed better hooks into those workloads. I needed, some production grade features, some hooks that allowed me to change the configuration of my workload while it was running. These patterns that the Spring Boot team, thank you so much, that they brought us and this auto configuration that made the easy parts easy, allowed me to get to the hard parts. That was it. As a platform engineer, I want Spring Boot workloads because it gives me that visibility into what's really happening. I can have a sense. Again, and this is all just open source. This is, you can get it out of the box. You can get these health checks. You can get these real observability of what's actually happening inside of your code. Adding those types of metrics to your code is really easy. So as a platform engineer or even a site reliability engineer, somebody that cares about what's going on in production, Spring Boot makes it easy and gives you these patterns that are proven in the enterprise. And it gives them to you out of the box. It's a great experience.
Awesome. It sounds really awesome. Now, let's switch gears a little bit. Because, well, we're while recording this is March 24, and March 24 quite, well, it always the start of the big conference season. So we had GTC quite recently of NVIDIA. And also KubeCon, to date, probably the biggest KubeCon that was organized, 12,000 visitors. And one of the things, especially at KubeCon, that stood out was a lot of talk about AI. Now, it's kind of, I wouldn't say the elephant in the room, but, let's talk a little bit about AI. There's a lot happening in this space. And what does that mean, both from a developer experience perspective, but also how does that impact Spring?
Fantastic question, right? Again, everybody, I waited. I wasn't going to jump in. It'll pass, but here we are. And again, thank you, Spring team, because they introduced Spring AI. Spring AI gives me an abstraction layer on top of the models like OpenAI, like Bedrock and Gemini. It gives me a model of conventions on top of that where I can consume these different models with ease, the same way I put it in the same bucket as Spring data. I can switch as a developer. I can switch between an Oracle backend, a MySQL backend, a Postgres backend, even a Redis backend. I can switch between those using Spring data conventions and patterns easily because Spring helps. Spring helps me make those moves. Of course, I don't get access to all the important, one-off and unique bits, but I have an abstraction layer that gives me the 80-20. It gives me the most bang for the buck where I can get in and I can start to leverage these things as fast as possible. But AI at large, we realize that, hey, maybe we don't want to send all of this information to somebody else's AI model. Maybe we don't want to be giving all of these questions and code to somebody else. That can get real ugly really quick. We've already learned that lesson. So here we are in 2024. We've learned that lesson. And there's a movement. And again, the Tanzu team is here. We're moving towards this private AI. Right? I want access to those models, but I want to keep them here. I want to make sure that everything that we learn consuming those models, I want to keep that here. And yeah, and now there's a AI tile for Tanzu Application Service, which is just one example. Spring AI allows me to consume the publicly, you know, open AIs of the world just as easily as I consume Ollama on my Raspberry Pi. So this makes my world a whole lot easier. And as a developer, I want to have access to these things, right? The landscape is changing. And here we are. Spring AI is helping me understand that landscape a little bit better, even before it's at a 1.0, right? It's still at a 0.8.1, I believe. Even before it goes 1.0, the Spring AI project and all of the contributors that have brought in different models and brought in different abstractions, all of that work has made my life easier. It's allowed me to learn about this AI ecosystem so much better than what I would have tried to do without it. Plus, it's Spring, right? I can switch between the AI consumption to the database consumption to the event-driven to the batch workloads. I have access and I have this comfort level in the Spring ecosystem that makes my life easy. So I can combine that with what's being delivered by Tanzu around this private AI. And you brought up an NVIDIA, right? Now I can start to consume NVIDIA GPUs as a part of these workloads. And I can do it at scale. It's a great time to be a Spring developer. And the platform engineers that are out there, they have a way to deliver a private, secured model internally for their Spring developers. So you can keep up and you can move forward safely, right? We don't have to fear the AI because it's in our house. It's a great time.
You triggered me because one of the things, during the keynote at GTC, a new type of GPU was announced, Blackstone, BlackRock, Black something.
I don't remember the name. Yep.
Yeah, but it like huge GPU, a SuperPod, DGX SuperPod was announced, all to run Llama models and other types of models at scale and with extreme performance. You just mentioned that you're running a version of Llama on a Raspberry Pi. Please explain.
Yeah. So I have these Raspberry Pis, and it's not just the Llama 2 model. It's Llama 2 and Mistral, and there's one more in there. And what I've done is, as I'm exploring, they fit on a Raspberry Pi, right? I can do this on a Raspberry Pi. I can run it on my laptop. I'm typically deploying things with Kubernetes. I typically like to have the scale to zero. So I'm deploying lots of demo, you know, quality apps, or maybe if there's a chat, right? And I have those things deployed in my home lab. And one of the interesting things that I've done is like, I want to know which one of these models is going to serve my use cases the best. So I've put Spring Cloud Gateway in front of these different models, and I send in the same prompt to Spring Cloud Gateway. And then I'm using Spring AI to interface with these different models on the back end. And I can ask the same question to my Spring Cloud Gateway front end, and it will send that same question to those three different models, for example, and whichever one comes back first, I don't really care. Give me the answer. So some types of questions are handled by some models better, right? Not every model is the same. You're going to find that, hey, this one works better with code. This one works better with writing emails. So this is an example of what I'm doing internally as I'm playing with these different models. They're running on Raspberry Pis, deployed with Kubernetes. So I've got Kubernetes YAML that's deploying my Ollama with Llama 2. And that's how I'm using it. So they're just running in the background in the data center, and I'm putting Spring Cloud Gateway in front of it because I kind of care about the speed, not so much about the results. So I can just ask my question, and whichever model returns back first, lucky me.
Without any GPUs, obviously being part of a Raspberry Pi, but
no GPU necessary. Works. Yeah, it takes a little bit longer, but no GPU necessary.
Nice. Well, and I'm quite sure that many of our listeners are actually playing around with AI in their home lab. So it's mm-hmm. good to know that the Raspberry Pi is maybe one of the go-to platforms to use.
I'm going to go another step. I'm going to tell you something that might be a little bit controversial because I know that you're a fan of NVIDIA. And I think I've said I don't have cloud money, nor do I have NVIDIA money. But I happen to have a 4090 sitting at home, and I happen to have an Ampere CPU sitting at home. And what the Ampere team has done is they've introduced some really interesting framework around these AI models that are going to leverage what the Ampere ARM64 architecture can do to help out these AI models. So instead of needing the GPU in order to get these fast responses, I maybe can save a little bit of money. I can use a different architecture with some of the additional help that the Ampere team is delivering, and I can maybe get 90% of the performance, but at 40% of the cost. So this is where I'm exploring, doing kind of side-by-side analysis, and Spring AI is helping me do that. Because I can consume these on the different platforms against the different models, and I can do a side-by-side comparison. So that's part of my job. It's kind of explore these places where you, your engineering team, your developers might end up one day, and I just want to share what I've learned. So that's one of those other areas that I'm exploring, is like the cost benefit. And yeah, I can afford a Raspberry Pi. I cannot today. You know, hey, fingers crossed, someday I'll be able to afford to have, you know, a cloud full of NVIDIA. But
Jetson
until then,
Nanos,
I have a
Raspberry
Jetson
Pis
Nano.
On steroids with a couple of CUDA cores in it.
I have a Jetson Nano as well.
Awesome. So I love those things.
I'll admit that one's not running today. It is sitting on my desk. It is waiting to be deployed. But I'll be honest, it's not running today. But yeah, we'll get there. So
now you mentioned
exploring.
You're exploring. Dude, this is the best segue ever. So I saw this week that the call for proposals was opened up for VMware Explorer in both Vegas as well as Barcelona. And one thing that really stood out to me is a large number of different Spring-related topics that people can submit proposals for. So first of all, you know, what type of proposal would be interesting, you know, for a conference like Explore to share with the audience?
So again, not the company line, but I'm going to tell you what gets me the most excited. And I think the community likes it. I like to hear what's the cool thing. Your audience has done a bunch of cool things over the last year. They've got some great stories. Here's how we handled this situation. And the community would love to hear about it. Right? I said earlier, again, you don't have to spin wheel. There might be a better way. The submissions that I want to hear, the submissions that I want to see, I want to see talks about how you accomplished something on your path to production, how you overcame an obstacle, how you did something in a unique way. Those are the kind of talks that I fall in love with when customers or, you know, somebody that's presenting say, hey, here was our problem and we saved $1 million a month. And here was the solution. Or it was taking us 6 months to get a release out because of process. And here's the changes that we made. We didn't have a relationship with our vendors. You know, it was a different vendor every day, but they never came together. Here's how we overcame that and got our vendors to work with us. These are the kind of solutions that I want to hear. These are the kind of submissions that I want to hear for Spring One and VMware Explorer.
Awesome. I'm very much looking forward to that. So there's one final question I would like to ask you, and it's also immediately the part that you can put shameless plugs in, because I know for a fact that you are very active when it comes to, podcasting or creating video content as well. If people would like to know more about Spring, about the development stack in general, open source philosophies, where should they go? And please put in the shameless plug.
I'm at Deshaun on Twitter/X, YouTube.com/@Deshaun, and LinkedIn. I'm at Deshaun. So anybody that's listening, feel free to reach out. Because of you, I'm here to help. So now everybody that you're connected to, you have an access to me, and I would be happy. If you're running into a problem on your path to production, call me. This is it. And yeah, that's where I'm at. There's also spring office hours. The show that I do like with Dan that. Vega every
yeah, I
week.
Like that.
It's just like this. We're going to have a conversation. We might talk about something new, but we always make time for Q&A. So our audience says, hey, we'd like to learn about this. And you know, whether it's the next week or 2 weeks, some point we'll say, hey, yeah, here's some content that you asked for. Here's a little topic, an introduction, a 101, 201, for example. But we always have time for that Q&A.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Deshaun, for a very interesting episode. So any famous last words or anything you want to plug?
Yeah, if you come to my house for dinner and you leave hungry, that's your fault. I'm inviting you to connect with me. And if you don't take advantage of that, that's your fault. So don't leave hungry. Give me a call and we'll go from there. Let's get to production.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that the Spring platform can help customers to bring applications faster in production and contributes to a great developer experience. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and rate the podcast where possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on X on @unexploredpod. Last but not least, I would like to thank Deshaun for a fantastic episode.